Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now in Judges chapter 6. I'm going to do verses 24 through 40. I'm going to entitle this section of Scripture, Gideon Destroys and Builds an Altar and Lays Down a Fleece. Our context is this. We're in the middle of the story of Gideon versus Midian, the bad guys, the coalition of bad guys that were against Gideon. Gideon is the fifth judge. Othniel was the first. Chapter 3, he beat the Mesopotamian king Cushan-Rishathaim. Then Ehud, the left-handed judge, beat the Moabites under Eglon, the fat king. Then Shamgar killed 600 Philistines with his ox goad. That's the first three judges. And then the fourth judge, of course, is the famous Deborah, who beat a Canaanite king up in Hazor. And now we are dealing with Midian. So we start now in Judges 6, verses 24 through 26. Then Gideon built an altar there to the Lord and named it, The Lord is Peace. To this day, it is still in Ophrah of the Abiezrites. Now on the same night, the Lord said to him, Take your father's bull and a second bull, 7 years old, and pull down the altar of Baal, which belongs to your father, and cut down the Asherah that is beside it, and build an altar to the Lord your God on the top of the stronghold in an orderly manner, and take a second bull and offer a burnt offering with the wood of the Asherah, which you shall cut down. Now where's the there that's being talked about in verse 24? Gideon built an altar there. If you recall from our last audio, first part of the chapter, there was a rock. And on that rock, Gideon laid some unleavened bread, some goat meat, poured some broth on top of the food there, and fire had consumed when the angel of the Lord, Jesus, touched the food with the tip of his staff. So that's where the altar was built. So this is the second altar. The first altar would be a place for that food to be consumed that I just talked about. I guess you call it an altar. And this is another altar so that the bull could be sacrificed on it that we're going to read about here in just a minute. Now, the name of that altar was The Lord is Peace. Probably because the words of comfort that Jesus said to Gideon in his fright. Some people have said that this was a prediction of the peace that was going to come after the Midianites' defeat, but I don't think that's what it is. I think it's because Gideon was given peace as he trembled at the thought of fighting the Midianites. To this day, it is still in Ophrah of the Abiezrites. Ophrah, of course, is that town about 20 miles north of Shechem in northern Manasseh where Gideon lived. It was his hometown. And the altar stayed there till the day that the book was written. That's probably sometime in the times of Samuel. Gil said Samuel actually wrote the book, but that's controverted, of course. But roughly 1050 when Saul became king, because that's when, approximately when the book was written. So the altar stayed there for quite a while. I don't know the date of Gideon. I know people put dates on these judges, but it's somewhere between 1350 and 1050 in there. So it's a couple hundred years, 100, 200 years, the altar stayed there. Now on the same night, the Lord said to him, Take your father's bull and a second bull, 7 years old. Now here we have the one bull, two bull controversy. Some people say it was one bull and it's just the way you translate it. His father's bull, it was 7 years old. Some people say he's supposed to take the father's bull and a second bull and then sacrifice the second bull. But then why is nothing said about sacrificing the first bull? Therefore, it must only be one bull. Well, the way I'm going to handle this is I'm going to say that the father's bull, this is an idea I got from Jameson Fawcett and Brown. He said the father's bull was prepared for sacrifice to Baal on that altar that Gideon was supposed to pull down. And because it was an offering prepared for Baal, it was not worthy of being sacrificed, so it was taken away, probably killed, maybe made into steak, I don't know. But then the second bull, the seven-year-old bull, was pulled from Joash, Gideon's father's flock. And that's the bull that was sacrificed. That's the easiest way I can see to handle that. So we're going to assume that it's the second bull. There were two bulls, and the second bull was the one that was sacrificed. And the next question is that first bull that Gideon took, how did Gideon have a right to steal his father's bull? Well, it was to be offered to Baal, and as John Gill says, quote, having a divine warrant for it. In other words, God allowed, sanctioned the stealing of that bull, it was sufficient for Gideon to take it without God's leave, to take it without his father's leave, and especially as it was designed for such an ill use. In other words, God gave him permission. I don't have any problem with this. Reminds me of my roommate in college. Before he roomed with me, he roomed with a guy named Tommy, and Tommy had a satanic Bible. He was exploring Satan worship, And my friend, a dedicated Christian, took the Bible and flushed it down the toilet. And I remember thinking, wait a minute now, that wasn't your satanic Bible. And my friend says, I don't care. I'm not going to be living in a room with a satanic Bible. I thought that was pretty cool, actually. You could say the same thing about Gideon pulling down his father's altar. He didn't own that altar, but it was an altar offered to pagan gods, and God doesn't like that, and he can override private property if he wants to. Now, you notice that Gideon was probably risking the wrath of his father by doing this, but as we will see later, his father stuck up for him, so that turned out nicely for Gideon. So we're not going to have any ethical qualms about Gideon stealing his father's bull. Now, this second bull that was taken from Joash was 7 years old. Why 7 years old? Well, that bull was born about the same time as the Midianites put the Israelites in slavery. So the bull's life was going to be ended about the same time as the Israelites' slavery was going to end. So this is Adam Clark's idea. He says the seven-year-old bull was a special symbol. We read in Judges 6:1, the Israelites did what was evil in the sight of the Lord, so the Lord handed them over to Midian 7 years. So they'd been oppressed for 7 years, and that bull had been living for 7 years, and by golly, that bull was going to be sacrificed to God. And as a result of that sacrifice, Israel was going to be free from Midianite oppression. So I think that's pretty good speculation on Clark's part as to why that bull was to be 7 years old. Now, the altar is said to belong to his father in verse 25. Now, even though it was a private altar, it was for public use. You can see by the reaction in the later verses, all the townspeople of Ophrah got all upset with Gideon. So that means that Joash was not hiding his idolatry. He had the altar out there, even though it was his, and he was maintaining it. All the people were enjoying it. So this was basically a public altar, a private altar for public use. Let's put it that way. Now, verse 26 says that God told Gideon to build an altar on top of this stronghold. Now remember, they're still talking at the rock where the miracle was done, the sign was done, the staff was touched, the food and the fire jumped up out of the rock. That's the rock that's being talked about. Well, an altar is going to be built on that stronghold, as NASB has it. The NIV has on this height, and the Holman Christian Study Bible simply has on this rock. I like rock. Now, that makes you think that that's the rock the fire came out of when the angel of Jehovah touched the food on the rock. Gill takes that option. Some people say, no, it's a high place that's distinct from the rock. It doesn't really matter. I'm just going to assume that there's a rock there with two altars on it. The first altar for the unleavened bread and the goat broth. And this was sort of like a memorial to where the angel of the Jehovah appeared. And the second altar was for a continuing sacrifice. Now, of course, then you've got to think, wait a minute, a sacrifice, but legally, by the law, the sacrifice is supposed to be done in Jerusalem at the tabernacle. Well, actually, the temple hasn't been built yet, so it would be at Shiloh where the tabernacle is. Things were kind of loose back then before they built the temple in Jerusalem. Now, I've already said this, but I'll mention it again. Why is the first bull not mentioned as a sacrifice? Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown's theory is the first bull was probably fattened up for sacrifice to Baal, and that was not fit for a sacrifice to God, so that's not mentioned. Only the seven-year bull is mentioned. I'm going to skip a bunch of learned discussion on whether it's one bull or two bulls, because I really don't care. Now, verse 26, the text says that God is telling Gideon to take that second seven-year bull and offer a burnt offering with the wood of the Asherah, which you shall cut down. Now, there was an altar to Baal, and usually what they did, they have an altar, a stone altar, earthen altar for Baal, and then next to it, they'd put a wooden pole. Those wooden poles were called Asherim. The plural was Asherim. Asherah is one. And that wooden pole stood for Astarte, Baal and Astarte, the two main gods there of the ancient Near East, especially in the north there. They started in Lebanon, present-day Lebanon, Phoenicia, and Gideon was to take that wooden pole, chop it up, and build a fire for the altar offered to God. Now, that's kind of interesting. You take a pagan piece of wood and use it in a sacrifice to God. It's usually not legal to burn idol wood on God's altar. Now, let me read you a quote from John Gill about this. Quote, "Everything ordered and done were different from the laws and usages directed to by Moses and practiced by the Jews. Gideon was no priest, and yet bid to offer sacrifice, and that on an altar of his own erecting, and not the altar of God, and upon the top of a rock, and not at the tabernacle. And the wood of the idol was to be made use of, which in other cases was not allowed. And all this was done in the night, which is not the proper time for sacrificing. But the divine warrant was sufficient for Gideon. In other words, God told him to do it. We're not going to worry about legalities right here. The Jews say there were 8 things that were made free or allowed now, which were not at another time. I count 4. But very obviously, Gideon was not following Levitical practice here. But again, God's got the right to overrule his own laws for special occasions. We go down to Judges chapter 6, verses 27 through 28. Then Gideon took 10 men of his servants and did as the Lord had spoken to him. And because he was too afraid of his father's household and the men of the city to do it by day, he did it by night. When the men of the city arose early in the morning, behold, an altar of Baal was torn down, and the Asherah which was beside it was cut down, and the second bull was offered on the altar which had been built. Quite a shock. Why did Gideon take 10 men to do his work? Well, he had a lot of work to do. He had to tear down Baal's altar and had to build Yahweh's altar all in one night. It's a lot of work. So he had 10 men. Now, you might ask, where did these 10 men come from? Some people have speculated since the 10 servants helped Gideon, they must have preserved the true faith and they weren't idolaters at heart. Yeah, maybe. Or maybe they were just obeying their master without giving too much thought as to what their actions meant because the master said so, so we'll do it. Well, at any rate, they got it done. Now, Gideon did it at night because he was afraid of his father's household. Now, what was he afraid of? Was he afraid of being killed? Well, probably not, because they're going to find out. And Gideon, of course, knew they were going to find out who did it. And he did it anyway. So if he was afraid of being killed, it wasn't because he was doing it. It wasn't because he might do it in the day instead of at night. What he was afraid of, in my humble opinion, he was afraid that if he did it during the day, he would be cut down so quickly when people would see it, they would be able to finish putting up the altar of Yahweh. Well, he was risk getting killed either day or night, but if you do it at night, he's got a good chance of finishing, and he did finish before he got caught. So I think that's what he was afraid of. He was afraid of not being able to finish God's work. Gideon is not exactly acting like a coward now. I don't think he's afraid of too much anymore. We're going to read in just a minute, the Spirit of the Lord was upon him. We go now to Judges chapter 6, verses 29 through 31. They said to one another, that's the townspeople of Ophrah, who did this thing? And when they searched about and inquired, they said, Gideon, the son of Joash, did this thing. Then the men of the city said to Joash, bring out your son that he may die, for he has torn down the altar of Baal, and indeed he has cut down the Asherah which was beside it. But Joash said to all who stood against him, will you contend for Baal, or will you deliver him? Whoever will plead for him shall be put to death by morning. If he is a god, let him contend for himself, because someone has torn down his altar. Now here we see an interesting phenomenon. The idolater, Joash, sticks up for his son, the Yahweh worshiper. Now why? Maybe he wanted to save his son's life, and blood is thicker than idolatry. Or maybe he discovered a newfound love of pure legal Yahweh worship. This is what John Gill thinks, quote, for though Joash had been a worshiper of Baal, yet he might be now convinced by his son of the sinfulness of it and of the necessity of a reformation in order to a deliverance from the Midianites, for which he had a commission and perhaps informed his father of it. Well, if that's the case, Gideon is a good persuader because he managed to turn his father away from idolatry in one night. So that's why it makes me think is mainly he didn't want to have his son killed. I think that's the real reason why he stood up against the town people. Now, why did the people of Gideon, the people of Ophrah, finger Gideon first? Well, there's probably several reasons. One is it was probably well known that he was no friend of Baal. It was probably well known he was a man of spirit and courage because no one else would have the guts to do such a thing. But Gideon, he's the type of guy that would do that. And also, since the altar belonged to Joash, Gideon's father, the townspeople may have thought that Gideon would presume on his father's protection. They say, Gideon's going to go cut the altar down, and he's going to know his father's going to protect him. So that's probably who did it. Or maybe one of the 10 servants had been questioned, and one of the 10 servants had spilled the beans and said, yep, my master Gideon did it. Or maybe somebody saw Gideon returning from the sacrifice after Gideon put the bull on the new altar. At any rate, it's not surprising that Gideon got caught. Now, notice that the townspeople of Ophrah didn't ask for due process and a fair trial of Gideon. They just assumed he did it and said, kill him. Oh, that's great. Sounds like these people that wanted Kyle Rittenhouse, who was just acquitted. If you listen to this tape 10 years from now. He was accused of shooting two people and killing them in a riot in which he was attacked by a skateboard and by somebody pointing a gun at him. He shot in self-defense. And, of course, people wanted to kill him. The far left, the woke left, said, kill him. Let Kyle Rittenhouse be put in jail forever or executed. But, of course, he got acquitted on all counts because of due process and fair trials. But these people didn't ask for that for Gideon. This shows how degraded the people were. The law actually said that worshippers of Baal were to be put to death, not those who destroyed Baal's altars. The townsmen had everything exactly backwards. They were the ones that should have been put to death, not Gideon. Now, when they ask Joash, Gideon's father, to put his son to death, it might be because Joash was the local magistrate. He had the local altar. Maybe he was the local magistrate who had the power to put people to death. Because that's a strong thing to ask a father to put his son to death. Now in verse 31, Joash says to the townspeople, will you contend for Baal or will you deliver him? And what he means for that, what's the point? Why are you fighting for Baal? He's a god. If he's a god, let him fight for himself. If somebody tore his altar down, well, big deal. If he's a big man, he's a god. He's not just a big man, actually. He's bigger than a big man. He's a god. He doesn't need you peepsqueaks defending him, and he doesn't need me defending him by killing Gideon. Let Baal defend himself, if you think Baal is such a big god. So that's a pretty good response. Joash has seen the light and has come over to the good side. We go now to Judges 6, verses 32 through 35. Therefore, on that day he, that's Joash, named him, that's Gideon, Jerubbaal. That is to say, let Baal contend against him. That's what Jerubbaal means. Let Baal contend against him. Because Gideon, had torn down his, Baal's, altar. Then all the Midianites and the Amalekites and the sons of the east assembled themselves. Now these are the three hostile tribes to Israel that were in coalition with each other. I talked about them in the last audio. I won't spend a lot of time here. But the Midianites were originally down in present-day northern Saudi Arabia or southern Jordan, and over in the Sinai Peninsula also, where the Kenites lived, Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, where Moses lived for 40 years, that area. And then they were also in the desert there to the east of Moab, or with Moab. They were nomads, so they moved around, but they were in the east of Moab. The Amalekites were in Arabia Petraea between the southern end of the Dead Sea and the northern tip of the Gulf of Aqaba in that area, and moving over west to the border of Egypt. That's where the Amalekites were, and they also were. They were basically in the southern part of Israel. And the sons of the east, that's probably the Edomites, the Ishmaelites, the Edomites, who had Mount Seir, which is along the eastern coast of the Arab Rift between the Dead and the Red Sea. And also on the western side of that Arab Valley, they had some land over there too, most probably. So they're all in the same general area, and they were allied together. Now, as you note, as I gave you the geographical description of where these guys are, they're mostly in the south, but they crossed over and camped in the Valley of Jezreel, which is in the north. Now, why is that? Well, first of all, the Valley of Jezreel, well, first, where is it? It runs from Mount Carmel, that little jut on the northwestern corner of Israel, near the northwestern corner. Kishon Brook runs northwest, southeast in that valley. It's also called the Valley of Esdraelon. It goes from Carmel, and it opens up on the Jordan Valley in the near the Jordan River, near Mount Tabor on the north side of that valley. Megiddo is a town on the southern side of the valley, about halfway down. It's a very famous place. That's where the so-called final battle of the world, Battle of Armageddon, which I don't believe because I'm an Orthodox preterist, but if you believe that, that's where it is. So this place is very suitable. It's a large plain, and it would be easy for the bad guys, the alliance of three tribes there, to bring their spoils that they stole from the Israelites. They'd just bring it down to that plain, and then they could get back over the Jordan River very easy because there's no cliffs on the side of the Jordan Valley there like there are in the southern part of the Jordan Valley. Let me read you what Jameson Fawcett Brown says about this geography. Quote, the southern part of the Gore, that's G-H-O-R, and the Gore is the part of the Arabah Valley between the Sea of Galilee and the Dead Sea. I don't know what part it is. It's probably the northern part. Probably the whole thing, really, but it's just say the Arabah Valley. The southern part lies in a very low level so that there's a steep and difficult descent into Canaan. In other words, if you're coming over from the east where the Amalekites would be and where the Midianites would be, and where the Edomites would be. You're coming over from the east to get to the west across the Jordan. You got to climb down these steep cliffs unless you go further north up the Jordan Valley toward the Sea of Galilee, and it gets real flat. It gets real easy to get over. Keeping this in view, says Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown, we see the reason why the Midianite army from the east of Jordan entered Canaan by the northern wadis of the Gor opposite Jezreel. Now in verse 34, first of all, in verse 33, the three bad guys, the Midianites, Amalekites, and the sons of the east, the Edomites, they assembled themselves. Why? Some people have speculated it was in response to Gideon tearing down Baal's altar. I don't believe that for one minute. The reason they assembled, it was because it was harvest time, and that's the usual time for plundering Israel. Oh, hot dog, the Israelites are growing some more wheat. Let's go get some more wheat and oxes and donkeys and whatever else they've got, sheep and cattle. We know it was harvest time because Gideon was threshing, if you recall, threshing and hiding his threshed grain in the wine vat in Ophrah, and harvest time for the wheat, at least, was in early summer, late spring, early summer, June, around June or so, May or June. And so the bad guys are coming to get their spoils. Now, verse 34 says that the Spirit of the Lord came upon Gideon, and he blew a trumpet. Gideon was filled with supernatural courage and wisdom. He was a leader from now on. It was because the Spirit of the Lord was upon him. That's the Holy Spirit. He blew a trumpet, and the Abiezrites, that's the family of Manasseh of which Gideon was a part, were called together to follow him. So his family members came first, and then verse 35, he sent messengers throughout Manasseh. Remember, Ophrah is in Manasseh. That's where Gideon is now. So then he sent messengers all throughout his tribe, and this is West Manasseh, not East Manasseh, West Manasseh, which butts right up on the southern edge of the Jezreel Valley. The northern boundary of Manasseh is the southern boundary of the Jezreel Valley. So Gideon sent messengers throughout Manasseh, and they also were called together to follow him. And he sent messengers to Asher, Zebulun, and Naphtali, and they came up to meet him. Now, Naphtali was the long, thin stretch of property all the way from around roughly Lake Hula down to the southern end of the Sea of Galilee and going west about halfway to the Mediterranean Sea. And then picking up from there, the western border of Naphtali was Asher. You go from the middle there, all the way to the Mediterranean coast is Asher. And Zebulun, if you go from Carmel down the Jezreel Valley, it is the first little, it's a small tribe there, right there in the Jezreel Valley. I don't know why Issachar, which is as you go down that valley, or actually I should really say go up it, because the Kishon is flowing in your face coming from southeast to northwest. As you go up that valley, you hit Zebulun next. You hit Issachar next. Now, I don't know why Issachar is not mentioned here. He wasn't called. That's a question that I don't have an answer for. But these tribes were close by, and it made sense that he would get them. Now, the next tribe south of Manasseh is Ephraim. Gideon didn't ask Ephraim to come help him, and that actually later caused some political problems. It occasioned a quarrel. Judges 8:1, our next two chapters from now. The men of Ephraim said to Gideon, "What is this thing you have done to us, not calling us when you went to fight against Midian?" And they contended with him vigorously. They probably thought Gideon was going to get to be a big shot, going to get some more territory, get some more spoils of war, and the Ephraimites weren't going to get any, and they were mad. We'll talk about that when we get to Judges 8. Now, another question is to ask, why didn't Gideon ask the Ephraimites? And at this stage of the piece, I have no idea why he didn't ask them. Perhaps we will discuss that when we get to Judges 8. So now let's go to Judges 6, verses 36 through 38. And then Gideon said to God, "If you will deliver Israel through me, as you have spoken, behold, I will put a fleece of wool on the threshing floor. If there is dew on the fleece only, and it is dry on all the ground, then I will know that you will deliver Israel through me, as you have spoken." And it was so. When he arose early the next morning and squeezed the fleece, he drained the dew from the fleece, a bowl full of water. Now, Gideon says, if you will deliver Israel as you have spoken, if you will deliver Israel through me, through Gideon, as you have spoken, that would be back at verse 14, Judges 6. When the angel of the Lord had spoken to Gideon, the Lord turned to him and said, "Go in the strength you have and deliver Israel from the power of Midian. Am I not sending you?" So Gideon had a fresh word from Jesus in his mind as he is speaking. And it says, Gideon said to God, I'm assuming that's the angel of Jehovah, God. But he's still not sure, so he puts out his famous fleece, verse 37. I will put a fleece of wool on the threshing floor. Now, why did Gideon ask for a sign? He'd already had one sign when the goat got burned up, the goat meat. Well, here's some options to discuss that. Perhaps it was to show that Gideon was to fight and conquer, whereas the goat-burning sign was to prove that the angel of God was divine and not human. The fleece, on the other hand, was to show Gideon, the wet fleece, was to show Gideon that he was to fight and conquer. Well, I have a problem with that. It would seem to me that if the burning up the goat meat sign showed that the angel of Jehovah was divine, that would be enough, because a divine person can beat any battle he wants to. A divine person could supernaturally win a battle with the Midianites. So that doesn't really answer the question to me as why Gideon asked for another sign beside the burning goat meat. Here's another option. He asked for another sign to encourage others around him, the people he was going to ask to fight, more than to encourage Gideon himself. Well, maybe. I don't know about that. I think the answer is really Gideon needed confirmation of his faith. There's a big thing he was about to do. He's about to conquer these nasty Midianites and Amalekites and Edomites that had been ruining Israel for 7 years. It's a big deal. And he needed some more confirmation of his faith. Now, because he asked for a confirmation, that doesn't mean that he didn't have faith to start with. Now, I want to contrast here modern examples of fleece laying. People love to do that. Oh, should I marry this person? Oh, should I take history or math next semester? Let me lay down a fleece. If the temperature tomorrow is between 70 and 75 degrees, I'll take history. If it's between 65 and 70 degrees, I'll take math. That is nonsense. That's nothing but Christian witchcraft, fortune telling. What's the difference? Well, the difference is that in the situation with Gideon, it was a big, big, big deal that he was doing. God often appeared to people in visions when there was a big deal. He appealed to Paul. Jesus appeared to Paul when he needed to convert Paul on the road to Damascus. When he was in Jerusalem at the end of the third journey and was arrested for his own good by the Roman officer there, and Jesus appeared to him, says, "You can be all right. You'll be all right. Follow the heavenly vision. I'm going to take you to Rome." Paul didn't have visions all the time. And he didn't lay down fleece all the time. It's just when he needed supernatural help, he got it. And a fleece here, it was basically a supernatural aid to encourage Gideon to do something that was not within his power to do. Now, for whatever reason that God allowed Gideon to do it, and I think I've explained why, he was very bold to ask for it, for ask for these signs, because he did it not only once but twice. The first sign was a wet fleece with dry surroundings. The second sign was a dry fleece with wet surroundings. He was very bold to ask for that. So to summarize about fleece laying, if the fleece layer is of pure heart and weak faith, and it's a extraordinary circumstance, yeah, I believe God will do something like that. I mean, there's too many testimonies of God doing that, and people take it and run with it and go too far with it. Now, Gideon in verse 38 squeezed the fleece. This was to show that the miracle had occurred. It was not natural for dew to be only on the fleece and not on the ground surrounding it. So the squeezing of the bowl of water proved that it was a miracle. But that wasn't enough, because we go now to Judges 6, verses 39 and 40. Then Gideon said to God, "Do not let your anger burn against me, that I may speak once more. Please let me make a test once more with the fleece." He's testing God. Whoa. "Let it now be dry only on the fleece, and let there be dew on all the ground." God did so that night, for it was dry only on the fleece, and dew was on the ground. Now, that was an even bigger miracle, because if you got a pile of fleece with water all around, that fleece is naturally going to suck up water, but it didn't. So, I mean, that was even a bigger miracle than the first miracle. Now, notice the way Gideon asked, "God, please don't let your anger burn against me, that I may speak once more." He knew he was being presumptuous. By asking again, it had the appearance of great distrust in God, as Gill said. And in fact, he's testing God. Now, Gideon wasn't testing the power of God. The word test is used here. "Please let me make a test once more with the fleece." He used that word when he was talking to God. Now, Gideon wasn't testing the power of God. He knew God was omnipotent, could do whatever he wanted to. He was testing the will of God. "Do you really want little old me to go fight those Midianites?" Well, that's somebody's opinion. It could be he was testing. Well, he couldn't doubt the power of God. I mean, that's impossible. But, you know, we all know God's got all powerful. But the question we always ask, well, is it his will to heal me, for example? Is it his will to get me out of this difficulty, this trial? So that's what Gideon was doing. He was having a spiritual battle like we all do when we're called by God to do something that's above our natural capabilities. Now, notice this test. He's testing God, but for a good reason. He's testing God to see whether he should do what God has asked him to do. He's not testing God in the sense that the devil tested Jesus, because when the devil tested Jesus, he was trying to destroy Jesus. God never tests people in order to destroy him. Only the devil does that. But you can test God to say, God, will you stand by your word? I need some help. My faith is weak. He'll do that. I remember when my faith was very weak when I was 18 years old, I asked God through the help of two members of my InterVarsity Christian Fellowship at the University of South Carolina. They offered to pray for my leg to grow out in the thin air, and I thought they were crazy, and I was scared to death. And I said, oh, God, please don't let me lose my faith. And while I'm praying that way, the leg grew out in the thin air, hot, boiling electrical fire rolling down the middle of my leg right in the bone, starting about halfway down my shin. Well, did I test God? I don't know, but he sure answered, and he built my faith. I've seen some, but I hadn't seen very many miracles since that two-year period back then. Actually, I don't think I've seen any. So it's a rare thing. It was a rare thing for me, but it was all I needed. It was one time I saw it, that's it. I never doubted since. So on that happy note, we have finished Judges 6. We are now ready to go to Judges 7 in our next audio, verses 1 through 25, the entire chapter. And we will see in that chapter Gideon's 300 men defeat Midian. Hope you stay tuned for that victory, and I hope you enjoyed this audio.